if, I mean, we can use the word arbitrary and it has, you know, a provocative reflection. We can use the word inevitable and it has a provocative reflection. We can use the word is and it has, you know, a provocative reflection. And all of them are, you know, you can get on the train with any one of them, and they all, you know, fail as right any kind of meaningful conveyance of what this is or isn't.
Right, you can't stay on any one of those trains.
Right, you can't.
The train can only take you so far, and then you find that there's other trains that. I don't know how well the metaphor works, but I see what you're saying is that that you can't just stop by being in that train, never getting off.
No.
Because it becomes a religion. It becomes a practice. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right.
And you know what practice is? It's,
yeah.
It's never getting anywhere is what practice is.
It's fun to explore looking into the nature of, call it being or suchness or is, or the arbitrary inevitability of what we think is happening right now, and feel it through.
Yeah.
You know, come to see how it attempts to convey an experience of durability, an experience of space or time or self or authorship. And therefore, you know, in our dear Robin Williams case, sufficiently profound disorientation and imposition, affliction, to be inspired to, you know, take his own life.
Hmm.
I mean, clearly what we call suffering or dukkha or samsara can appear to have legs, can really, really, really feel that we are on the receiving end of something less than God's grace.
Yeah, you know, I can see how it'd be easy to believe that or to go with that. But there's something about seeing it that way that seems to me like it's a temptation to get on another bandwagon.
Absolutely, it's all poetry.
Right, right. But that's the thing with the poetry. It's so easy to get swept into the romanticism of it.
I prefer it.
I know you do.
Yeah. Well, let's say, you know, maybe we can put on a diaper and sit in a cave, and if we're lucky, someone will bring us some yogurt.
Yeah, right.
Right. Oh, and yeah. And maybe that would be, you know, a preferred way to not get swept right into the romanticism of this miraculously appearing presence.
Does it have to be either extreme, right?
No, obviously not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The biggest conundrum I get is when I find myself totally sitting out in the yard, for instance, and it's very entertaining because there's trees and birds and the breeze and whatever else, bugs are going by. And generally, there will be long periods of no thinking whatsoever or nothing that's apparent. Or
nice.
Or it's so fleeting that it doesn't register as anything of interest.
Right, right, right. Yeah, there's no recall.
Exactly, exactly. And then all of a sudden, there'll be... Oh, shit, that sprinkler's been knocked over by some stupid fucking raccoon. I gotta fix it. And suddenly, it's like, oh, me, the stupid animal. How
So now you're in raccoon poetry.
Now I'm in Duca and some Sarah, so called, you know, because I think there's a problem. Well, yeah. Right now, it's much easier to just get up, right the goddamn sprinkler, and don't worry about the raccoon. It lives right here too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so it's like, what is that impulse? That
sure.
It's the same dance that's making the breeze blow and the birds go by. It's the same one, but there's something that wants, I don't know, that highlights it, that makes it recall, turns it into recall. You know, like you were, suddenly there's a story and you remember it because you're like, it's like somebody hands you a script and all of a sudden say, okay, I'll play this.
Yeah, really. I'll play the gal that's pissed off at the raccoons.
It's like, what the fuck? No, thanks. Hand it back. You know, to me, that's my metaphor in sometimes.
Well, that's, like, yeah, that's kind of a, you know, that's a good example of the, let's say, the randomness or arbitrariness, right, to coin a phrase, of what's appearing in consciousness and then what is got a strong enough pull for us to then create, right? A story, a three-dimensionality, a poetry that includes raccoons and me and a sprinkler and my disappointments or whether I'm going to get up and do something about it and, right? A proliferation, right? It's like proliferation on tap.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Consciousness is proliferation on tap. Now I think it seems that, you know, if there's a plausible transmutation, and of course that's what, you know, any card carrying seeker is interested in, right? Is a plausible transmutation. Otherwise we'd all be out bowling. So we can observe that our experiencing is proliferation on tap. And that proliferation on tap, in many cases, is strong enough and afflictive enough to encourage someone to take their own life. Sometimes, you know, we will ameliorate it or the affliction of it through relationships and drugs and all kinds of things that bring us to a 12-step meeting. You know, we may ameliorate it through yoga, meditation, gurus, tithing. You know, we know all the things that are possible for a primate to do in a given life to pleasantly distract themselves from existential panic, from proliferation on tap. And, you know, in the let's call it the yoga of radiant presence, I've heard that phrase somewhere before. What's the angle? Is it possible? We're asking the question, right? Is it possible for this life to be what it is and for me, as in my experience, to revel rather than suffer? Right? Isn't that what the seeker wants? It's like, hey, here's this shit. I would really, really, really love to revel and not to suffer in the face of proliferation on tap.
But the deal is you the reveling isn't, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to revel and I only get the quote good.
Of course, right.
It's revel in the pain, revel in the shit, revel in beauty, revel in it all.
Yeah.
You can't just pick and choose. I'm only going to revel in that.
Well, you know, if you asked 100 seekers at an Adyashanti retreat, let's say, where you could find 100 seekers, you know, what do they mean by, let's say, the suggestion of proliferation on tap, affliction, and the possibility of reveling? You would get 100 different stories, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing that we can talk about Kensho, enlightenment, awakening, all this stuff. And yet if we were really pressed to, let's say, express to each other what we mean by that, what we implied by that, it would be very curious that we probably would not necessarily agree, at least with respect to the words and the memes that we chose to, you know, share that investigation. So that's why, you know, proliferation on tap is a very rough but maybe poignant metaphor. And revel in present experience rather than be afflicted by present experience is also a very rough but, you know, evocative or perhaps poignant metaphor.
Yeah, well, the words are irrelevant. It's what they're alluding to.
Yeah, right. Yes, yes, yes.
And reveling can be, for instance, I could say that for me, reveling would be when I wake up not feeling great and I'm in a bad mood and I know I'm cranky, first thing I feel to myself is, oh, great, okay. And so, and I kind of let it go, but I do warn Peter, I'm cranky today. Be nice to me.
That's an act of compassion.
But it's more than that. It's that in that moment, I recognizing that, oh, so that's what's on tap today. That's the movie that's showing. I went to see a thriller, not a chick flick. You know? So it's like, okay. So, you know, I sit back, I put on my seatbelt, and I go, all right, take me on a ride. And
yeah,
so,
of course.
And so the day, and then, and there's a magic thing that happens with that is that I'm still cranky. I'm still not feeling great. But it's not bothering me anymore. Because
okay. Yes.
My hip might still hurt and I'm still cranky and I still have to notice when I'm just snapped back at somebody. But even the snapping back, I'm not necessarily apologetic. I may, out of my temperamental type, say to the person, whoops, I'm just cranky. But that's who I am. So that's the energy that I am, let's say. So
well,
of course,
here's the invitation. You know, bring the thoughtfulness and the energy that you're giving to this to what's present now rather than the,
right.
You know, ways that you and I might talk about how a certain day went other than now.
Yeah, I was using as an example, as an illustration of exactly what you're saying. Bringing that attention to the present moment, then you can revel in whatever is happening.
Well, that's what we're playing around with, right? The mystery of awakening or the mystery of radiant presence is, okay, here's this, here's Johnny. And what's its nature? How are we responding and relating to the curious myth, magic, gift, grace of this presence? And what might happen to the observation of, let's say, presence, if I were able to relieve myself or be relieved of any destination?
Yeah.
Right? Any, the slightest pinch of willful interest.
In other words, you stop negotiating.
Wonderful. What a nice metaphor. Absolutely.
Yeah, set it down.
Yeah, you stop exactly. Or one stops. We stop as in right now, though we can continue our conversation with glee, negotiating.
But if you do negotiate, if you see it, then you just see it as another presence. Then you're not negotiating with the negotiating.
Well, of course, it's like layers on the holodeck. You can go 30 layers up, 30 layers down, 30 layers to the left, 30 layers to the right. Right. The real key is that your entire life has brought you to this moment.
Right back.
Sure. And the investigation, you know, the question is, what would my experience look like and feel like as in right now if I drop my weapons? If I'm no longer filtering present experience through the reflex of assessment and or negotiation.
Pretty vulnerable.
Vulnerable. Okay. And is vulnerable fun, not fun, lovely, regrettable?
I wouldn't be able to tell you. I have no idea. I've never stopped negotiating.
Okay. Well, then it becomes a nice, what can we say? Locus of investigation, right? A mood of investigation to see how it would feel in your experience, since that's all we've got anyway, what this would feel like if we were to completely relax from the reflex of negotiation.
Or even explanation.
Yes, they're all included, right. All of the impulses of what we might refer to as anecdotal hysteria or dreaming in situ relax in their entirety. Explanation, negotiation, resistance, planning, right? Becoming the arbiter of an improved experience. Telling a story about a minute ago, or what happened hypothetically to me the last time I felt like shit, and how great I was at stopping to feel like shit. Because the only laboratory that we have is this one right here, right? This one. And if there's a, if there's a game plan, right, if there's an agenda, you could say the agenda is to play with feeling what this is or isn't or how it feels right now and discover how effortlessly free you already are from negotiation. That's, let's say to be glib, which of course I love to be, is awake. Doesn't have to be, a dramatic event. Now it may, go ahead.
What would stop us from that? What keeps us from that?
Nice. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, nothing, really. Nothing can. And you could say concomitantly, this is, right, profound permutation, proliferation on tap. So if, let's say there's a, I don't know how to move my hands in front of the camera, but I mean, each moment, in a sense, is, well, is it an opportunity? Is it present? Or is it already gone by the time you give it any notice? It's a weird question, right? Is present experience an opportunity, as in arriving? Is it present, as in actual, complete? Or by the time you even consider it, is it already gone?
I think most of the time I don't even notice it because I'm so off in whatever I'm doing.
Yes, yes. We are very comfortable and familiar with living from the symptoms of proliferation on tap. And so you could say that, mind, self-assessment, movement of language, movement of story is always late and always after the fact. You could call that conveniently so or inconveniently so. Because presence, if there is such a thing, and it's a shitty word, has no time. Has no shields. Has no destination. Has no preference. But the moment we start thinking about it, in other words, being the arbiter of the miracle of present experience, psychological time is instantly, right, in the field. Durability, self, psychological time, self-accusation, preference, right, reporting are instantaneous. proliferation on tap. And you could say that you could hold those symptoms, though they're not actually real, responsible for the mirage of durability and therefore suffering. So nirvana is responsible for samsara. The Buddhists will never tell you that. What they'll say is, you do your best to eschew samsara. Meditate your way out, bow your way out, eat living food your way out, chew 300 times your way out, buy a coconut for the guru your way out. And so that by mitigating, ameliorating, medicating samsara, you will be eligible for nirvana. What they don't tell you is that nirvana is indeed 100% wholly responsible for samsara. So where do you think you're going? And it's fucking weird, because this moment is absolutely nirvanic, because it is unencumbered and does not hold anyone or anything hostage. It can't. And yet, it also appears, as we refer to proliferation on tap, that this sucks, and it can suck so bad that it's worth taking my own life.
But usually when it really sucks, it's got nothing to do with the here and now. It's what's going on in the head.
Fair enough.
It's almost always head stuff when the suffering gets big.
Yes, you could say that that's, you know, a profound observation of the nature of resistance.
But
yes.
What's going on in your head is part of what's going on now. We make a distinction, or there appears to be a distinction, let me be clear, that somehow or other that's different. And that stands out much more importantly than whatever else is going on.
Yeah, right.
And what's going on in her head is like a crow screaming and yelling outside my window. What the fuck do I care what it's saying?
Yeah.
But why the fuck should I care what my thinking is?
As long as the crow, as long as the crow is chasing the raccoons away.
Then I'm okay with the crow. The minute starts waking me up at night, then I have a problem there, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, that's the thing, though. It's just noise. If it was in a different language, it would be, you wouldn't pay any attention to it. It would be music.
It's very, very bizarre to look this deeply, or shall I say intimately, carefully, right, at the genesis of what we call suffering, at the genesis of what we refer to as samsara or affliction. And what we might want to hold responsible for it. And you suggested, and wisely so, that if my mind, my thought, my head is where the kernel of resistance is occurring, then that can be contributing to suffering, to affliction, to resistance. And yeah, that's perfectly sanguine, makes perfect sense. And it's also peculiarly not true. And there's really no way to, you know, insist on anything or get to the bottom of the genesis of what we refer to as suffering in some heroic attempt to ameliorate it.
Yeah, I think the statement about it being in your head was another negotiation.
Yes, but of course it's a very wonderful observation. Yeah, I mean, suffering, you know, physical pain, you know, injury, ill health, anger at our spouses, et cetera, the energy of all that, if we could get a sense of the rawness of it, we could say it's not suffering. The suffering are the stories told, the resistances told, from the vantage point of a durable self that is somehow, you know, feels injured or afflicted or mishandled. So we get angry, we get disappointed, we get lonely, we get all kinds of things, which is, you know, radiant brilliance. Luli, I think your mic's on mute. I hear your mouth moving.
Sorry. Yeah. You know, to say that something is all in our head or any other description, I mean, I don't really care, is to miss the point that where is this all in our head occurring? Where is the tactile sense being felt? Where is smell being felt? Where is any of it being registered?
That's great.
If we look at the registering instead of thinking it's thought or thinking it's smell or thinking it's touch, just those are all the arisings, so to speak, the thousand things.
Sure.
The one thing is, where is all of that, or when, or how, or who to, you know, just to look at that which registers all of that. It's like, it's mind-boggling, literally, if you're lucky. Sure. So there goes that.
Yeah, that's a fantastic, you know, encouragement, you know, or strategy or inquiry. Yeah.
Yeah, it's to stunning. Look at. Yes.
To look at all of the who's, what's, where's, when's, how's, for's, why's, et cetera. And to see that we can't answer the question it's another wonderful gateway into what can we say? Unafflicted dumbfoundedness.
And there's an addiction to answering the question, to any question, right? It's like, okay, yeah. Let's pose a question. Now we better come up with something, or at least some facsimile metaphor, right? Yeah. But instead, it's like, okay, what is all this that I'm calling thought or smell? And then you go, fuck if I know.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's interesting to... Let's play around, with your kind permission, with a certain quality of subtlety, because all of those questions are so powerful, you know, the why, what, who, where, when stuff. And what happens when those questions, instead of being asked either right externally or even internally, transmute just into, what could we say, non-directional availability? Which is this, yeah. Right, already, yes. More than sufficient presence, kind of wondering about itself without being all that specific.
Yeah.
I mean, I can feel the, well, let's call it the texture or the rainbow body, Jesus Christ, of asking all those questions as a simultaneity, without asking a single one of those questions. Because it's more, let's say, more fun just to hang out in the space from which they might be asked in the first place.
Yes.
Yeah. The space is primary. And, of course, the space is not space. It's just it's a barking noise we give for like, what the fuck is this?
Like,
yeah. And that's the, you know, this kind of repetition, this wonderful sense of coming around and coming around and coming around again, mm-hmm. to feel, become acquainted with the spaceless space from which or in which everything occurs. All permutation and proliferation occurs. I think our friend from Canada is planning on joining us.
There she is.
She is.
A little blurry today, no far.
Well, now that she's coming into focus.
She must be in one of those moods, one of those blurry moods.
Yeah, that or I'm in a blurry mood.
Well, she's a bit
it could be you.
Everyone else is looking pretty sharp, though.
Uh-huh.
It's a lovely quality of yoga, quality of contemplation, quality of engagement, to just hang out and feel this.
It's the only. It's well the put. Only.
Yes, well put.
Yep.
I mean, you wouldn't want to go to an Adyashanti retreat and say that out loud. You might get trampled.
Don't be putting down one of my men.
I can't help it. It's just me.
He's the guy that led me up to the main dude, Peter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, like any ice cream stick, when you've gotten down to the bottom, you can toss it.
That's right.
Oh, I have. As a matter of fact, a little while ago, I was looking for something different, so I put it on a couple of his videos, and it was like, oh, yeah, that was when I was in elementary school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
The trick lately that I use, from Peter's teaching, is to see what else is going on. So my first... The first thing I do is focus on my story, because if that's got me,
right.
And then I see the story, and then I look and see what else is going on, and then I've got everything. I see everything at once, and that's it. So there's nothing to do with any of it. I'm just seeing it all, like you've been talking about. You're just sitting in it all.
Okay.
That's it. To me, that's the end. That's the end. I don't think there's any place else to go.
Nice. All right, so that becomes a working, what would you call it, reminder, right?
Yeah.
Process, in a manner of speaking, for you to become more engaged with the holography of your awareness.
Right, and after doing that and getting good at that, it starts to happen without the trick.
Yes, right, you drop
the
trick.
That's the magic, when just riding down the street and you're just like, whoa. You know, there's just what's happening, and there's nothing else, and this is that. This is it.
Yes, without the trick.
Yeah.
I'm just responding to Suzanne, who texted. I think she may join us too. Yeah, Luli, you I don't know if you spent much time speaking with her, but Suzanne and her partner Kevin were at the retreat in May.
Oh, that's Suzanne.
Yeah, you might recognize her. Yeah, Suzanne from East Coast, not West Coast.
Oh, okay. East Coast Suzanne.
It would be a cold day in someplace warm. For West Coast Suzanne to participate in one of these things.
If she could manage to get on Fuse, right? Oh, I don't know. She's pretty good with the internet.
When she can be, when she needs to be.
Well, it's just a little too public for her, I think.
Yeah.
She wouldn't show her face anyway.
Well, so that's really a really fun, wonderful kind of sharing that you can use a certain, let's say, technique, a yogic, right, impulse to open the aperture of your awareness in a, let's say, kind of deliberate manner, right?
Right.
Yeah, because you're aware of the possibility, you know the experience, it speaks to you with profound confidence, and so then you may successfully, let's hope more often than not, use a certain kind of trick, a certain kind of strategy to... can we say consciously, willfully open the aperture of awareness? And opening the aperture of awareness returns you to a quality of engagement or receptivity which feels right, which feels awake.
It feels like the only, there's no doubt about it. That's it for
me.
Nice.
This is
what it's, for that moment, that's what awake feels like.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, it's nice. It's great to have such a, you know, unadorned quality of confidence that appears in your experience and you have no doubt about it whatsoever. You know, I mean, that's the gift of a thousand lifetimes.
Says it a lot. The more often, and framing it in time, but it's not. But the more often it that you find yourself in that awareness, the less time in between those, and the longer those remain with you. In other words, they become lengthier, so-called, in time, and not quite so separated by time either. So that pretty soon it's pretty much your experience all the time. Even though what we can sometimes describe as lost or in thought or whatever story begins to be seen as not lost in anything because it's clean, it's clear, it's present, it's...
Absolutely. Exactly like Peter's teaching. Like you just said, lately it's been accumulating more and more, just incredible. And when I'm lost, you know, when I'm lost in something, it's still fine. There's not as much of a jump back anymore. There's not so much of a this and that, you know.
Doesn't take so long to get.
It's just, it's pretty awesome.
It's awesome.
Awesome are us.
Well, the word there, awesome, is more about the awe of it.
Mm. Oh,
awe more often, you know, and with longer duration, so to speak. And then the yoga of seeing this becomes sort of the sweet sinking into, I don't know, to sweet.
I don't know who to write the check to.
I know, huh?
It's like,
who's responding? And there's people killing themselves?
What the fuck? Thanks for facilitating this, Jeff.
Pleasure indeed. It's nice to feel this, whatever it is or isn't, not turning into anything. Mm-hmm. Not creating the imagination of past or future or priority or something to do or not do.
So you were talking before about those glimpses, you know, and they get a little more prevalent. It's such a temptation to grasp. It's like, I just want to stop everything and just like put everything else on hold. That's it. And then, you know, it just doesn't last. You know, I get a little glimpse. I was at Lisa's last weekend and I'm talking to somebody and behind this person, there was a, I think it was like a rubber tree or something, like a plant. I'm telling you, this plant was like, it was like winking at me. It was like totally speaking to me of something well beyond where I was and what seemed to be going on. And I just, I don't know, it was like calling me in away from, I guess you might say, normal reality.
Sure.
And?
And I just kind of like, paid it as much attention as I could while continuing to carry on what I, the conversation I was carrying on, and then it just kind of went away and done.
Well, that's a glimpse.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no such thing as, you know, ordinary experience.
Or it's all ordinary.
Well, ordinary in this context, as contrasted with a spontaneous moment of noticing something that reveals or invites your consciousness into a more profound moment of intimacy, of availability, of relationship. I mean, this moment is gotta be as good as the moment that a flower or a plant or something magical whispered to you.
It's funny because when we talk about that, you know, those glimpses.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we're differentiating between the normal humdrum, bored to shit at work.
Yeah.
And the magical glimpse of this plant that I got. Yes. All of a sudden, I'm dividing the world into two things.
We do that. This does that. That's proliferation on tap. Feasts on the appearance of dividing the world into, you know, one condition or state as contrasted with another.
And your contention is basically this, you know, the bored as shit at work is no better, worse, different than...
No, being at work sucks.
Winking at me.
Come on, being at work sucks.
Appears to be the case.
Yeah.
It sucks less for me than it used to. I know I'm talking in time again, but to me, the glimpses get bigger, and then those that the moment to moment awareness carries into some of the shit, and then there's an awareness there too. So there's a lot going on, and I don't like what's going on, and this whatever, but. There's still I guess the ocean metaphor works for me on this. All of a sudden you're part of the ocean and everything is just the waves now. So even when the waves are choppy, you still feel like you're in the ocean. Like you feel there's a presence and a peace even in the midst of all the shit. So the shit is just more different energy now for me.
Well, yeah, you can only start here. Not that there is a here, and then so-called go forward from here. Right? You know, like, so today at work, yesterday at work is a memory, and the memory conveys a certain kind of feeling. And we can apparently measure, you know, how I felt 2 weeks ago at work versus yesterday at work or today at work. And I can notice that, oh, I'm maybe a little less irritable. I see and feel more, you know, curious, serendipitous, magical moments showing up, which gives me a sense of ease, a sense of delight, a sense of appreciation. And those are all, you know, remarkably accurate, in a manner of speaking, expositions of what we think happened prior to this moment. But, you know, you can't go back. You can't live earlier today. You're always here, and if there were such a thing, headed for forward. And one can't really assess here, now, except through fantasy. And I appreciate, I think we all can appreciate that, wow, you mean from this point forward for the rest of my so-called imaginary life, awake is the predominant or only lens?
No. There's this moment. I mean, we talk about the past when we talk about the path and about this stuff.
Yeah.
Even Peter talks about time and everything when he's working with everybody. Yeah. But as far as the future goes, yeah, who fucking knows? It's just right now. Just appreciate this right now, and that's it.
Yeah. Well,
otherwise, you're gone again. I mean, even when I talk about the past, I'm gone again.
Yes, that's right.
Right. So I mean, you know, I understand that the main thing, what we're talking about here, is right now and what this present moment is.
Yeah. Just, you know, playing around with the texture of what's present without placing ourselves in an arbitrary condition, either in the past or the future. Yeah. And like we were saying earlier, the recognition of, what would you say, the pristine nature of awake is unutterably miraculous. Full stop. I think it's an acquired taste to become confidently comfortable with one's present awareness or present experience, free from the reflex or the impulse of making it about something or turning it into something and placing myself in the center as a durable entity. Mindfulness, you know, on retreat, on Vipassana retreat, they may teach that mindfulness is being mindful of, right? I'm turning on the light, I'm drinking water, I'm walking slowly to the men's room, right? But what if mindfulness had nothing to do with an of? That there was no reason at all to harness or corral the miracle of your attention to be mindful of something. See, being mindful of something creates, once again, an imaginary arbiter of experience. I'm feeling, being, practicing, successful at mindfulness of, mindfulness about. Then it's bullshit.
Sure, it's bullshit. It's all bullshit. Anytime we open our mouths, it's bullshit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, it's good to have a sweeping generality. I was just playing around with that this has no object, has no subject. It doesn't actually convey agency or durability that belong to me.
Unless you're referring to me as this.
Of course, in all of the non-concise ways that we speak about things, you could shift, right, on a dime to, what do we say, identification with this as this, non-dually speaking. And so it's all you, only you.
Right.
Yeah. Sure.
So then when I refer to me, I refer to this.
Yes. Absolutely.
So this experience is appearing as this. As a individual sitting on a porch, looking at his thoughts, branching out from there, checking everything else out. That's the experience that this experience is having.
Yeah, well, I would say that, no, that's a story told about the experience that is present.
Who's telling the experience? Who's telling the story?
I don't know. I can't say.
The experience is the only thing that's here.
Okay. All right. And if that, what we're referring to as experience, is expressing from the point of view of adornment or what this is or isn't, which of course is its privilege to do so, then, you know, it's up to you or anyone else to figure out whether that's, I don't know what to call it, sincere, insincere, genuine, not genuine, samsara, nirvana. How would I know?
I think when it sees itself for what it is, then it's I don't know how to finish that.
I'm with you. Yeah, that's right. Right? I mean, yeah.
The goal, I don't want to say the goal because, you know, then I'll...
No. No, the poignancy of revelation, right, and the collapse of stories told or conveyances is, right, unspeakable, can't be reduced to some kind of finality.
Right, there's a difference between when, you know, this sees a separate entity and then when it finally sees that there's not a separate entity, that there's just whatever's happening is happening. That's all. There's a difference.
Sure, yes. Yes, it's right, quite plausible, perfectly super and swell to recognize it as a difference. And we can always play, you know, non-dual devil's advocate with each other until the cows come home and say, there's no difference.
There's no difference.
You know?
Well, this seems to like to play little games and,
yes,
you know,
right,
and have fun. I mean,
yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, it would be snow on an old TV, you know?
Yes, I mean, sure.
And that's why it's different, you know.
Yeah, and even in the midst of all of this miraculous, you know, nanobotting permutation, it's snow on an old TV.
It is.
It's weird, right?
When because it sees itself as that.
We're playing around with, you know, nothing masquerading as something.
Right.
And it's not only nothing, and it's not only something, and nothing and something are not other than, you know, this. Is the something fake and the nothing the real?
No such thing as fake.
Right, it wouldn't make any sense.
No, if it's appearing, it's real.
Yeah, we could say that it's real, or we could say that it's appearing, right? You know, the famed experiencing.
Actual. I like the actual works good.
Sure, yeah. Actual's
nifty. I mean, you got to come up with a word to say that it's there.
Yeah, if you're selling tickets, you have to have, you know, an act. I bought orchestra seats, but nobody showed up.
Like I said, if we want to really be accurate, then we would just sit here and look at each other and not open our mouths.
Sure. Or both or neither, you know.
That wouldn't be any fun.
No.
No.
That's no fun. We'd all be like... right? I mean, our lives, the joy and the privilege of hanging out with each other is remarkably experimental. Being willing to participate in a, you know, virtual, two-dimensional conversation about the nature of consciousness and kick it around is lovely, strange. It's a, you know, it's a privilege.